Hello and welcome to our program, which is the reading of the ARP magazine. And this is brought to you by Owl Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Kevin Altamirano, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the ARP magazine here on Owl Radio. A feature article from the ARP magazine that I will read today is called Fans and Friends Forever. And this is about Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, Sally Field, and Rita Moreno, and also Tom Brady. And these five dish about their new Super Bowl comedy and the joys of having and being fans. And this article was written by David Hockman. Together they fill a Hall of Fame with their statuettes. Lily Tomlin, 83, has Tonys, Emmys, and a Grammy. The accolades for Jane Fonda, 85, require a separate Wikipedia page to catalog them all. At 76, Sally Field has 3 Emmys, a pair of Golden Globes, and 2 Oscars. And then there's Rita Moreno, who at 91 is one of only 17 performers in history to have received an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony, the storied EGOT, E-G-O-T. Between them, they are credited with more than 100 movie roles, accounting for more than $6.5 billion at the global box office, and literally hundreds of TV episodes, Broadway shows, and hit records. You might think of these legends would be so self-satisfied with their own stupendous success that the concept of what some might call fangirling, being an over-the-top fan of someone else, simply wouldn't apply. Think again. Take the case of Tom Brady, 45, the 7-time Super Bowl champion and football's most illustrious unretiree, who returned to the NFL this season just 6 weeks after officially calling it quits last February. Quote, "Oh, he's remarkable in his work, just remarkable," quote, Moreno says. "He's at the top of his game and the best in his field, and beyond that, he's gorgeous, kind, and sweet," says Fonda. "Your jaw drops at the skill level," Field says. "He's like a great, big, beautiful, perfect 20-year-old that you'd want to be your son," gushes Tomlin. Fandom clearly has no expiration date, at least as it pertains to the holder of nearly every major NFL quarterback record. The women, along with the object of their adulation, appear on screen for the first time together this month, which is March, in the sports comedy 80 for Brady. It's a heartwarming, cheer-from-your-seats romp about 4 lifelong friends and die-hard New England Patriots fans who embark on a raucous late-in-life road trip to watch Brady play in the 2017 Super Bowl. Inspired by a true story, it's mostly a fun-loving meditation on goofy sports traditions, bonds built around tailgates, and the agelessness of passion. For the high-profile Hollywood friends who made 80 for Brady, the project was a chance to reflect not just on what it means to be a fan and what their legions of fans mean to them, but also on the decades these performers have spent respecting and rooting for one another. And how could they not? Since her early roles in Singing in the Rain, The King and I, and West Side Story, Moreno has brought exuberance to the screen like no one else. Fonda's appearances in films from Barefoot in the Park and Barbarella to Coming Home in The China Syndrome helped her become a leading actress of her generation. Tomlin broke through on television with comedy on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, playing characters like the telephone operator Ernestine and childlike Edith Ann in an oversized rocking chair. Long before she and Fonda co-starred in the recent TV hit Grace and Frankie, they made 9 to 5 together. In January, they released another big screen comedy called Moving On. Field is credited with some of the greatest of all Boomer hits: Gidget, The Flying Nun, Smokey and the Bandit, Norma Rae, Mrs. Doubtfire, Forrest Gump, and that's just in the 20th century. quote, "I guess you can say we've done okay for ourselves," end quote, says Moreno. Sitting down for a revealing and frequently hilarious conversation with Arp, the four actors opened up about their famous friendships, the hero encounters that have intimidated even them, and why being a fan never gets old. This is a question and answer format article, so we'll start with the first question that was asked by the interviewer. So, for starters, are you a sports fan? Lily: we are now. Rita Moreno: are you kidding? I'm a Golden State Warriors fan down to my bones. I've been to games, but usually I'll just holler and scream at the screen at home. It's true physical genius doing what those basketball players can accomplish. And I'm a nut for football too, especially quarterbacks like Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. Jimmy Garoppolo from the San Francisco 49ers is also cute as hell. Beautiful eyes. Jane Fonda: I've been a baseball gal forever, partly because my husband's got me into it. Ted Turner owned the Atlanta Braves, and we went to many games. And Tom Hayden played first base with a local Los Angeles hardball team called the Hollywood All-Stars. Sally Field: I'm a longtime sports fan, and I think the world underestimates the huge audience that older women represent. I feel almost sentimental and teary-eyed about it. Football was always in my life because my boys, who are now very much men, also loved football, so I watched it with them. And now that we have a football team again in Los Angeles with the Rams, I'm back to being a big fan. But it's not just football. What pro basketball did during the pandemic by going into a bubble, and how baseball continued and gave fans that outlet, I mean, it saved me. Question: the women you play are devoted Tom Brady fans. At this stage in your long careers, what responsibility do you feel to your fans? Tomlin: I've got fans of 40, 50 years who write me or call me, and they're like extended family. One in particular, Niles, reminds me that we met 47 years ago at the Sun Theater in San Francisco, and he still remembers lines from my old monologues. At this point, he's not like a fan. He's sort of like a brother. I'm wondering when he'll try to get me to buy him a house. Fonda: I grew up with a father, actor Henry Fonda, who, if someone started approaching him to ask for an autograph, would literally run away. He couldn't stand being reminded of his fame. But you know who taught me about the importance of fans? Dolly Parton. When we did 9 to 5, I watched how she interacted, how she listened, how she truly cared, and how grateful she was. And I thought, oh my gosh, Dolly's right. Our careers depend on our fans. That changed me forever. Moreno: I love seeing someone's eyes gleaming because they recognize me. Recently, I was on a bus in New York and two young men said, "Hey, you look like Rita Moreno." I said, "Yeah, I am." They said, "Are you kidding us?" I said, "I am who you say I am." They wouldn't believe me. I finally had to pull out my driver's license. Question: another big theme of this movie is the timelessness of a friendship. What do your friendships with one another mean to you? Field: most of us have known each other for so long, and I admire each other so greatly. We sometimes would forget we were making a movie just to get us to listen, to be quiet in the scene, and do the scene was a challenge. Fonda: Lily and I go back, wow, almost 50 years. I remember seeing her for the first time when she did a one-woman show in the 70s called Appearing Nightly. I was blown away by her then, and I still am. Tomlin: and I already idolized Jane. After seeing her performance in Clute, I ran out and got a Clute hairdo. Do you notice any differences in how younger and older fans respond to you? Fonda: More often than not, if I'm walking down the street, I'll see these young girls recognize me, and I know what they're going to say. I loved you in Monster in Law, which was the 2005 comedy co-starring Jennifer Lopez. With older fans, it's I loved you in Coming Home, or they'll say, my favorite movie was Cat Ballou or Barefoot in the Park. That makes me happy. Tomlin. I don't have a lot of young fans, but there's nothing like people who have been through 40 or 50 years with you and know all the permutations of your characters. They want to know what Mrs. Beasley or Trudy, the street person, is doing. It's a bond that can reach each other through. Question. So you've all been famous for a while, but did you ever get nervous about another celebrity and ever ask for an autograph? Fonda. I was intimidated by Katharine Hepburn. My God. When we made On Golden Pond, she made sure I knew she was always top dog. Autographs? The one time I asked for one was when I ran into Muhammad Ali in the airport. My knees almost gave way in front of him, and I already had won 2 Academy Awards. Tomlin. I've always been completely mad for Lucille Ball. In my 30s, I saw an article where she reviewed newer comics. When she got to Lily Tomlin, she wrote, I just don't get her. I could have wept. Some years later, a friend arranged a dinner with Lucy. I was terrified, but it turned out okay. Lucy told this wildly hilarious story about developing a bad toothache the morning she had to fly to New York and gargling with far too much brandy. And of course, by the time she got to New York, she was blotto. Imagine sitting at dinner with Lucille Ball acting out a story like that. She looked exactly like Lucy. We never met again, but I will treasure that memory forever. Question. One more takeaway from the film is how enthusiastic people can be into their 70s and beyond. Does that apply to you? Field. You're never too old for the next chapter. Fonda. I think as you get older, you get better at almost everything. I love my work more than ever, and it feels more balanced now. I take things in stride more than I once did. Things are a little simpler. And finally, Moreno. I will confess that I wake up smiling. Yes, sometimes I sit in front of the mirror and go, yikes, who's that old lady? But then I'll put on some makeup and I'm absolutely amazing. And this, of course, was written again by David Hockman, who is a contributing editor for ARP. And he recently wrote the October-November cover profile of Adam Sandler. And this is the accompanying article, very short, question-answer format, a Q&A with Tom Brady, who also talks about these ladies we just read about. So, the Q&A with Tom Brady. Question, what's it like for you watching these 4 world-famous superfans go crazy for Brady? Answer, it blows me away. They are amazing. Not only are they great actresses, but they're spectacular people who were so sweet and welcoming to me on the set. To have these icons together on a movie like this, it is really a once-in-a-lifetime experience and obviously so humbling, says Tom. Question. It's refreshing to see age 70-plus women loving sports. What does this movie say about the enduring nature of fandom? And this is the answer by Tom Brady. Sports brings so many people together, and it's not just about the game. It's the friendships and the camaraderie and the relationships you have before the game, during the game, and after the game. The women in 80 for Brady bond over sports, but it's really about the bond they have with each other over the course of many years. Question, what do your fans mean to you? Tom Brady. We're playing a sport and competing, but what we do is really entertainment. So you try to entertain people. People want to see you come through, so I always try to do my best. If someone's paying their hard-earned money to buy a ticket, I want to do great things for them. question. Who are you the ultimate fan of? Answer. Michael Jordan. I had posters of him on my wall, and he's still one of my all-time idols. I first met him in the early 2000s, and I remember being a little nervous at the time just because of his presence. But he's one of the greatest. He's one of the greatest and a terrific guy. Question. You retired, then unretired last year. Is retirement overrated? Answer. Retirement is a scary word. I mean, you're not retiring from life. So when I am done with football, I believe I have many chapters to write. You've got to keep your mind busy. You've got to keep your body active. You've got to keep your spirit active. You've got to do things you enjoy doing with people you enjoy doing them with. And the last question. Let's say the moment eventually comes. What would an ideal retirement look like? You know, 23 years into this career, some decompression and relaxation would be good. It would be nice to be a little slower paced in the morning. I still want to be really productive with things that I'm doing in the midday, and then make sure I'm a present father for my kids and give them all the time they need. That's the end of that article. Our next reading section is from the Healthy You section of ARP. And the first article is about cocoa, and it's entitled Loco for Cocoa. Some chocolates can actually reduce your heart disease risk. To pick the best bar, read on. If you're going to give your heart to somebody this Valentine's Day, oh, so that was way back in February, why not make it a healthy one? Replace that junky chocolate with a version that can boost cardiovascular health. The cacao bean, which is what chocolate is made from, is high in heart-healthy flavanols and antioxidants, says Lauren Maniker, who's a registered dietitian based in Charleston, South Carolina. For a snack you can eat every day, switch to dark chocolate bars and take a close look at the labels. Here's what to watch out for. Watch out for some buzzwords like dairy-free. Dairy-free is a popular label term, but quality dark chocolate is naturally dairy-free and often organic as well. Cocoa versus cacao. Milk chocolate is less than 50% cocoa or cacao, meaning at least half the bar is sugar. But a chocolate bar labeled 85% cacao is about 15% sugar. Health benefits. In one study, those with hypertension who ate chocolate bars containing 70% cacao showed improved blood vessel flexibility. Ingredients. As with any food, the fewer the better. High-end chocolate is made with only cacao, cocoa butter, and cane sugar. Look at sugar. Aim for 8 grams or less per ounce. Maniker, who was that registered dietitian based in South Carolina, she says this. And she also says, if you have diabetes, look for options made with sugar alternatives, such as stevia. Look at fiber. Dark chocolate isn't a great source of gut-healthy fiber. Some choices, however, offer up to 2 grams of fiber per ounce. Additions. Natural add-ins like almonds or cherries can contribute health benefits to your chocolate, but avoid concocted ingredients such as caramel, which, while delicious, adds extra sugar and not much else. And serving size. As tempting as it might be to devour an entire bar, the nutrition facts may apply to only a few squares. So watch portion size. Ideally, limit yourself to 1 to 2 ounces per day, Maniker advises. Chocolate, like wine, reflects the terroir of where it's grown. For instance, chocolate from Madagascar often has citrusy notes. From Venezuela, it may taste of red fruit. Belize might taste of fudge. If it's from Ecuador, it might have slightly floral flavors. Many small farmers grow organic cocoa, but can't afford the certification required to use that term on food labels. And this article was written by Kelsey Ogletree, and she writes about food and wellness for Bon Appetit. Another article that's in the healthy use section is entitled Eight Habits That Are Raising Your Blood Pressure. Seemingly innocent everyday behaviors might be putting you at risk for stroke. Hypertension is commonly called the silent killer. It's a leading risk factor for stroke, heart attack, and heart failure. But while exercise, medication, and going easy on the salt shaker are all important in keeping blood pressure down, you may be undoing all that good with a handful of personal habits that can put you at risk. Ask yourself if any of these factors sound like you. Pressure point number one. You're an antisocial woman or an overly social man. As a species, we're not meant to be without other people, says Anna Jen Conklin, an assistant professor at the University of British Columbia. If you are socially isolated, it raises your cortisol levels to put you in a fight or flight response. A study Conklin conducted of 28,000 adults ages 45 to 85 found that for women, being single, having limited social activity, or being part of a small social network was linked to higher average blood pressure. Interestingly, Conklin's study found that men who lived alone or had small social networks were less likely to have high blood pressure than those who lived with others or had large networks, greater than 220 people. It's a lot of people. It's unclear whether the difference was due to biological reasons or simply because there's less stigma around men going it alone. That said, feeling isolated is not good for your arteries. Another smaller study of adults ages 50 to 68 found that those with the highest scores on a loneliness survey had a systolic blood pressure, that's the first number in a blood pressure reading, that was 10 to 30 points higher than that of their less lonely counterparts. Pressure point two, you hold it when you have to go. A full bladder raises blood pressure about 10 to 15 points, explains Luke Laffin, doctor and co-director at the Center for Blood Pressure Disorders at the Cleveland Clinic. That's why he and his colleagues encourage people to urinate before they measure their blood pressure, particularly if they're doing so to monitor the medications they're taking at home. It's fine to hold it if you're in a situation where you cannot urinate freely, but if you can use the restroom, then you shouldn't necessarily delay, Laffin says. Do a preemptive pee before going to the theater or beginning a long car ride. Speaking of urination, getting up frequently at night to relieve yourself may be a sign of hypertension. If your blood pressure is elevated, that causes the body to say, "I need to lower my blood pressure." One way to do that is to urinate. Pressure point three, you haven't had your thyroid checked in a while. Both overactive and underactive thyroids can raise blood pressure. A severely overactive thyroid can boost your risk of cardiovascular issues, says Nicole Rhonda Bloom, doctor in an accredited endocrinologist based in New Hyde Park, New York. Bloom encourages patients to get their levels checked annually or every 6 months if they have a strong family history of thyroid disease or symptoms. And if you're on thyroid medication, make sure you're taking it as prescribed. Skipping medicine for low thyroid doesn't often cause high blood pressure, but missing medicine for high thyroid can be problematic, Bloom adds. Pressure point number four, you pass on the produce. Having too much sodium is a long-established catalyst for hypertension, but consuming a diet rich in produce can help counter these effects thanks to the potassium found in many fruits and vegetables. Potassium decreases blood pressure by causing our bodies to release sodium, says Seamus Welton, an assistant professor of medicine at the Johns Hopkins Medicine Division of Cardiology. Men should aim for 3,400 milligrams of potassium per day, and women need about 2,600. There's no need to take potassium supplements unless your doctor recommends this. Foods including bananas, dried fruit, potatoes, and beans will help keep your salt to potassium ratio in check. About 75% of the sodium most people consume is already in food when they buy it, Welton says. Swapping out processed foods and eating 4 to 5 servings of fruits and 4 to 5 servings of vegetables per day is the key to reducing your sodium and upping your potassium. Pressure point number five, you relax with a drink or two. A study of more than 17,000 U.S. adults found that just 7 to 13 drinks per week substantially raises one's risk of high blood pressure. Moderate drinkers were 53% more likely to have stage 1 hypertension and twice as likely to have stage 2 hypertension than participants who didn't drink. That percentage got higher with the more drinks a person had. Welton warns that even drinking too much in one sitting can spike your blood pressure over the next few days. Stick to the rule of thumb of 1 to 2 drinks per day for men and 1 per day for women. Pressure point number 6. You take medication your cardiologist doesn't know about. In one study, 8.5% of adults with hypertension reported taking a medication that contributed to increased blood pressure. There are several medications that can do it, notes Carrie Kimmensteel, director of the Interventional Cardiology Center at Tufts Medical Center. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, such as naproxen, which is Aleve, and ibuprofen, which is Motrin, and decongestants like Sudafed, which contains pseudoephedrine, are known to increase high blood pressure. Some antidepressants and immunosuppressants can also be culprits. Always ask your cardiologist about the new medications before taking them. Pressure point number 7. You have erratic bedtimes. People who don't get 6 to 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep can have elevated blood pressure. Studies have found that sleepless nights raise blood pressure not only throughout the night, but the next day as well. For quality sleep, go to bed and wake up at the same time every morning. Avoid drinking and eating 90 minutes before bed, and don't watch television in bed. If you're snoring, gasping for air in the night, or exceptionally tired during the day, get checked for sleep apnea. Treating this lowers blood pressure by 3 or 4 points in the average individual, Laffin says. And pressure point number 8. You're toughing it out with chronic pain. Ongoing pain can cause chronically elevated blood pressure. And taking NSAIDs, those Aleve or ibuprofen, for more than a week to try to manage your pain can raise your risk even more. If you have pain that lasts for more than a few weeks, see your physician and don't delay needed operations such as knee or hip replacements. All right, everybody, you've been listening to the reading of the ARP magazine here on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radios or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thanks for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Kevin Altamirano saying goodbye from Owl Radio.